Hey there, Star Wars fans. This is Annalise Ophelion, the director of Looking for Leia. We're on a quest to tell the stories of girls and women who love the galaxy far, far away, and we need your help.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
We're running a Kickstarter campaign for production funds that ends this Friday night, June 23rd. Either we raise all of our $25,000 goal, or we don't get any of it.
Do or do not. There is no try.
Time is running out.
Could help if I got out and pushed.
Here's what you can do. We'd love it if you'd visit lookingforleia.com and follow the links to our campaign. Donate what you can and pick up a cool perk while you're at it. Every dollar counts and helps us tell the stories of the girls and women of Star Wars fandom.
General, count me in.
Help us spread the word about this campaign from Coruscant to the Outer Rim by posting the link to social media and telling your friends, fandoms, and family. We're celebrating the richness and diversity of female Star Wars fans by dedicating a feature-length documentary film to their stories. Support women-made film. Support women in fandom. And please, support Looking for Leia. Thank you.
May the Force be with you.
All right, guys, a special edition of Sith Disturbers Hour. What do we call this one? The Spaceballs Sith Disturbers Special Edition. Try saying that five times fast. And as you heard, we're trying to get the word out for the Looking for Leia project, which is tantalizingly close to their goal. I think they're going to do it, but let's see if the Commonwealth can push them over the top. So head to Kickstarter, look up Looking for Leia, and choose a cool reward. I'm on the page right now as we speak. And I'm going to put my money where my mouth is later tonight after we record this show. So best of luck to Dr. Annalise Ophelion. And let's see this project see the light of day. And with that, we start with our Spaceballs 30th Anniversary Sith Disturber Special. Guys, I am super stoked for this. What's going on?
What is up?
I'm sitting here on ludicrous speed. I just watched the movie. I turned it off and then turned my computer on and pushed Skype hello. Like I literally I'm that fresh off it.
I thought you said I'm fresh off lots of speed.
Well, that too. I feel good, man. You can't watch that movie and not feel really, really good.
It's too much, man. Oh God. Hard to believe it's been 30 years though.
That's a question I wanted to almost ask you guys. Is it a relative feeling? Like now, looking back on it, like I think that's what I wanted to ask you prior to the show, Kyle, but I didn't really have a chance. But our experience with this film was very similar to that of A New Hope. I don't know if the fans from this show are listening to the Tumbling Saber, but we watched it with our cousins in A New Hope anyhow. And I'm quite sure, certain it's the same case for Spaceballs as well.
It could very well be. I don't quite remember. I just remember laughing my ass off.
Anyhow, like, just growing up in that Star Wars era, I came out in 87. Like, I was just, at that point, I knew my Star Wars. You know, I know who was who in the story and all that stuff. So, it was just perfect for me at that age, anyhow. So, I'm not sure how.
Well, let's back that truck up for a sec. I don't think 6 years old, Spaceballs is perfect for a 6 year old.
No.
I'm just gonna put that out there.
Maybe, but yeah. Well, we saw it when I saw it when it.
Not perfect for a 9 year old either. Well, I'll say that as well. But we just happened to be in the right place at the right time, with people who didn't really care what movies we watched.
Yeah, it was the 80s, man. We got away with a lot back then.
We'll move on to Spaceballs. So released on June 26, 1987. To a budget of $22.7 million, which is interesting because that's pretty much double of A New Hope's budget of $11 million.
And the effects aren't as good.
Exactly. Although, doing the effects, interestingly enough, I believe they were handled by, I don't want to say Lucasfilm, but I think Mel Brooks cut a check as part of the deal with Lucas to do this movie. Because it was important for Brooks to have Lucas's endorsement. And if spoofs are kind of exempt from these copyright infringements, so they could have done it anyway. But Mel Brooks has said that, you know, it was important for him to have Lucas's blessing on this. So
that's interesting. That's part really of the cool. deal.
Yeah. No, I think that's really above board. I dig that.
Respect.
Yeah. And I think part of their deal was, well, for one, it was Lucas said you can't merchandise the movie. Don't do action figures. Don't do toys. Which is funny because it's a pretty funny gag in the movie itself. And second was that Brooks cut a check to Lucas for them to do the effects, if I'm not mistaken. This is Sith Disturber, so I don't hold myself as accountable to the facts.
The only thing that makes me question that is that the lightsabers look so bad that I don't know. No, I believe it's like the team who did Ghostbusters. It looked a lot more like Slimer when their two Schwartzes get tangled. Like, I felt like I was watching, or Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It was more those kind of effects than Lucasfilm. So if you're right, then they didn't bring their A game to this.
Yeah, movie. It was their junior department.
Yeah, it's B squad. It was a 6 o'clock shift on a Tuesday afternoon.
So I just did a quick Google search. So yes, ILM did work on it, but most of the work was done by Apogee. I don't know. ILM created the dancing alien.
Yeah, I believe that. And maybe even the blasters.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. At least Lucas and Brooks had spoken to one another, which is kind of cool. And it pulled in a box office haul of $38.1 million and had sort of a mixed bag of critical and audience praise. And I think part of the issue with that was that it came out 4 years after Jedi. So it was in that absolute black hole of Star Wars. Like, there was nothing going on. Then suddenly here comes Spaceballs when the craze was gone. So I think that only hurt Spaceballs a little bit.
I think they had to wait a bit of time anyhow to release that film. I think, yeah. I mean, even in 86, I still remember there being toys in the stores still.
Star Wars toys.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they were on the pegs for right through the 80s. But not Spaceballs toys.
No, and I'd totally own a Dark Helmet action figure. Who wouldn't?
I would own that whole line.
Oh, yeah.
So, James, what was your first experience with Spaceballs?
It's funny. It's not one of the movies where I have a vivid, like, oh, yeah, we sat here and I watched it with these people, you know, and these were the circumstances. Like, I have that for Superman, Christopher Reeve's, like, the first one. I have that for Star Wars. I have that for a few, like, for Goonies. But I don't have that for this movie. I have, like, an amalgamation of dozens and dozens of viewings. And then, like, reenactments where, like, I know particularly my buddy Kirk Reed and I watched that movie together over the summer of, I guess, you know, when would it have come out on home video? 88? So, like, 88, 89, those two summers, we must have watched that movie dozens of times anyways. Like, I don't want to put it on a number that's too crazy, but, like, I wanted to say 100 times. I don't know, maybe half that, but a lot of times.
You wore out your VHS cassette.
Yeah, we didn't, but, like, I'm surprised we didn't. That's you know, it must have been getting thin. Especially the scenes, like, there were some scenes we particularly liked, which we'll all get to, but, like...
Ludicrous speed. Sir, we've never gone that fast before. I don't know if the ship can take us. What's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken?
And what's the matter, Colonel Sanders? Chicken? Like, that particular joke, man. to a 12-year-old? Slayed. Just slayed.
Yeah, I mean, this movie was chock full of corniness. It really does, like, travel the spectrum of comedy from slapstick to crass to corny. And a couple of highbrow jokes in there, too.
It's all there, yeah.
Okay, so let's go through this movie really fast. Well, I guess we'll round table it. And this is probably going to end up being a mess. But what is Spaceballs if not a mess? So let's go through this. So the opening crawl right, like they stick gags in there right off the hop in this movie.
I timed it. 1 minute and 29 seconds. That's how long it takes.
I'm guessing it's probably not as long, or not quite off the mark from a Star Wars opening crawl. But it's right at the end. If you can read this, you don't need glasses. Thanks for the memo, guys.
Oh, I meant, sorry, time-wise, I jumped ahead. I meant the ship takes a minute 29 seconds to get to scroll past the screen.
Yeah, I timed that too. A minute and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the best.
Obnoxious, right?
Well, I like how the design too, like as you're watching it scroll, there's these fins and wings that stick out that keep making it look like the end of the ship. But then it just, you know, a new part sort of keeps scrolling by.
Well, it's funny you say fins, because it looked, you know, it almost had like a Jaws-esque soundtrack to the background.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
And then we get to the bridge of the ship, and we right away meet the Spaceballs, who are kind of the fill-ins of Stormtroopers. And they have these big, white, round helmets. Like shapeless, round helmets. Right away, stupid. But just, so funny.
Just pointing out the you know, sort of silliness of the Stormtroopers. It is sort of a ridiculous costume. Like, the Spaceballs are more ridiculous. And now, if anything, actually, they've sort of, like, normalized the Stormtroopers.
Yeah. And you see, like, everybody's face is kind of, like, mashed in there. Everyone's got, like, that little, the Pudge face. What are those, the Sharpay face? Like, everybody's just squeezed into that helmet.
It's so ridiculous.
They're all assholes.
Well, one of the, yeah, they're all related too. One of the jokes I missed was in the opening crawl, where instead of episode 4, they
chapter 11, yeah.
Chapter 11. Yeah, I mean, I noticed it, but I didn't catch the meaning behind the joke until I wrote it down.
Yeah, it's true. A little bit of.
Like, do you think they're getting at the whole bankruptcy thing here?
100%. Yeah. No doubt about it.
They weren't just throwing in chapter 11 to make fun of the fact that Lucas started with chapter 4?
Both. That's why it's so great.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there chapter 4 bankruptcy?
No.
It's just chapter 11, right?
It is chapter 11.
But right away, like, again, like, meeting the characters in that scene, like, this is, again, one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Like, right away you're meeting Dark Helmet, like, walking out.
You can't breathe.
Yeah. And then, you know, the guy is like, he's like, great. He's like, alert President Scroob. And the guy's like, he's like, I've already taken the liberty, sir.
What? You went over my helmet?
He's like,
you went over my helmet?
So good. No. Not really over. More to the side. I'll never do it again.
I'll call you first.
It's so good.
The helmet is as wide as Rick Moranis' shoulders. It goes, it's flush with the edge of his shoulders.
But just right away. Like,
well, I wonder if that was a careful design element too. Otherwise, he would not be able to navigate through doorways and stuff. Because there's no way he could see out of that thing.
Yeah.
He's like, don't worry, Rick. If your shoulders can pass, your head can pass.
Like,
just walk
straight. Like cat whiskers?
Yeah.
He probably had some extra support there too to keep it like straight.
Oh my God, too funny. And a lot of the humor was literal. Like super literal, you know? Like the old school Fawlty Tower stuff.
Oh yeah,
you told me to classic. Alert you when they were, you know, on the radar, and they're on the radar.
Yeah, yeah. I love Mr. Radar.
Planet Gerudi is in sight, sir.
Yeah.
What's Mr. Radar though? We can't miss out on that. He's like looking at the coffee machine. It's like Mr.
And he gets
coffee.
All mad. He's like, yes, like, of course I want coffee. He's everybody like, knows I drink coffee when I check the radar.
Of course we do, sir.
And then also, during that scene, too, that's the first time they break the fourth wall, like, right off the bat. Like, Colonel Sanders is explaining what, you know, what they want the heir from Druidia and all this stuff. And then, like, Rick Moranis turns around and looks at the camera. He's like, everybody got that?
Yeah, it's good. It's great.
Well, it's amazing because the dialogue is so blatantly, shamelessly expository as Sanders tells you exactly what their plan is.
And then you're... Hot. Too hot.
And, you know, we should mention that this whole episode is sort of dedicated to ads because he's not seen Spaceballs. So.
Did he not watch it? Because the picture he posted on Twitter made it look like he was on, like, the start menu.
I think that's it. I think this he was earlier watching it today. This evening.
I think he's primed himself. But we're going to drive the point home now. So he rolled his eyes the whole time.
It's true. That's
we're going to make it funny.
That's what
it
I was
probably
trying to,
didn't hold up. I wonder if it holds up at, you know, this many years later. Maybe some of the jokes.
That's what I was trying to get at. Like, for us, it's a part of our youths, you know, like we grew up with it kind of. We were ready for that kind
youths?
Of yeah, our youths. Our roots. But whatever, you know, like as an adult, what do you guys think if you would see this film for the first time today? Would you have any of the same feelings about it?
It's hard to say. I think I'd love it, but who knows? We'll ask guys.
Yeah, well, you wouldn't. This humor wouldn't. I don't think most of the jokes wouldn't fly today.
Well, and a lot of it's like, you know, it's the first, like, now in credits and stuff, they put in jokes and humor, but like that, if you can read this, you don't need glasses. That was like the first time that kind of joke had played. Like, it set a tone for people to copycat. But now that, yeah, that stuff doesn't hold up because it's not new and fresh anymore, you know?
Exactly. Then we're introduced to John Candy's Barf. Bartholomew.
No, first, what about Prince? You're missing out on Prince Valium, no?
Oh, yeah, right. We missed out the whole resistance to the wedding, right?
I love
one of my top six jokes is in there.
Yeah, this is all so right, good.
Go for it.
Well, the Prince Valium, I always found him a bit annoying, even as a kid. Like, I know he's supposed to be, but, like, I didn't find him that funny. He's one of the characters didn't land with me.
That's one of the things I only, like, understood as I got older, you know? Like, Valium.
I even knew what Valium was. Like, someone explained it to me, or, like, I think my mom might have been taking Valium at the time. But, like, I knew what Valium was, and I was like, ah, this is dumb. But in that opening crawl where she's, like, walking with her dad down the aisle, and then they get to the priest. I love the priest, man. He's amazing.
Yeah.
And he's like...
The play-by-play.
Yeah. To witness Vespa going right past the altar, down the stairwell, out the front door.
Running right past the altar, down the ramp, and out the door.
He's so good. So great. He gets super excited. That's one of my laugh-out-loud moments in the movie, for sure.
For sure.
Right past the altar, down the stairway, and out the front door.
Yeah, on Prince Valium, I couldn't stand him either. And the reason for it is because Jim J. Bullock was like a mainstay.
On Hollywood Squares.
on Hollywood Squares in the 80s. And he pissed me off then too. And so I just never got... I just could not stand the Prince Valium character.
What else did he do? Wasn't he on like a TV show?
He was on a sitcom. One of the bigger sitcoms in the 80s. I can't remember which though. Now I just kind of... change the channel. I don't know. I don't know what if he's done anything in years.
He should be fired.
He should. Well, yeah, maybe he should retire.
All right. So now, they get in their Mercedes, the brand new one that the king asks Lone Star to see if he can save as well. They get in that thing, and now they're out in space, and we meet Barf
dancing around to the sweet, sweet tunes of Bon Jovi.
Buff. Yeah, we definitely, the listeners have just heard that song on the way in because that's what we're opening with.
Yeah, I love that. Buff.
It's so good.
Puke.
It's so good. It's
whatever.
Just, what a tone setter for these characters, right?
It is. It's so good. It's that's a perfect, perfect intro for those two. The two bachelors. Man and Mog.
I got to be honest, that's not far off the intro that I would totally accept in the Han Solo movie for you.
That's true. Absolutely. And we're also introduced to Lone Star, the mashup of Luke and Han. Although I guess he's more Han than Luke, but...
He's a lot more Han. He's almost never Luke except for when he's wielding the Schwartz.
Correct. He takes the responsibility of both characters.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to note, this movie is only an hour and a half. And it moves pretty briskly.
Yeah, when you watch it now, like in the form where you're actually not like... Like, the way we just did it, I don't know if you watched it again recently, Kyle, but James just finished watching it. I've watched it over the course of last night and today, you know, but just with pen and paper in hand, and when you look at it like that, like, the story's just like, it just goes tick, 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 like, so quickly, you know, like, everything just falls into place so, you know, you really have to let yourself go to be able to look past that at all, I guess.
Well, one of the things that's always gotten to me over the years, and it was highlighted as I watched the movie again, was the whole idea of the interior of the Winnebago. Like, every time they do an interior shot, it doesn't look consistent. Like, it looks like there was four different sets, which there probably were, but none of it's coherent.
It was a big Winnebago.
Yeah.
On one wall, there's it looks like they're in a workshop. The other side, one side's like a living room, but none of it feels like it's in the same place.
You know what? I wonder if they did that. Like, I wonder if that was a purposeful gag that I sort of missed. I wonder if it's a different interior every time.
I'm sure it is. I don't know if it's meant to be a gag, but I'm sure it's meant as like a, this is the best we could do with the money we have. And then who could forget Pizza the Hut and Vinny?
Yeah.
I mean, there's two 1980s icons right on screen for you. Pizza Hut, that was like the quintessential family restaurant of the 80s. And the play on Max Headroom.
Yep, I was going to do an imitation, but I'll just plug it in with the sound effects. But Max Headroom was a very popular character.
Yeah.
Super annoying, too.
Or else pizza.
Very annoying. Holy moly.
Is going to send for you.
it must have been a long time, and I'm talking maybe a decade or more since I've seen this movie. It felt so long that I had seen it. And I'm looking at Vinny's face, and in my mind, it was always like some like prosthetics and almost like a helmet like plastered to the guy's face.
No, it's makeup.
It's all makeup.
Yeah.
It's all really well done shading of makeup. It's amazing.
Yeah, it
so
is
well
good.
Done.
It is. It's terrific.
I love Pizza the Hut in that, though.
Much better than Pizza's costume, actually, which is just disgusting to look
it's
at.
It's so gross.
It is so,
it's absolutely
it's
disgusting.
It's perfect, though, the way it's just dripping and falling into his mouth. He's such a perfect character. Like, it's the same before, like, boff, puke, whatever. And then after, he's like, oh, no, no, no. And then he's just making it up as he goes along. If you really think about it, he's like, a million space bucks.
Like, what? Which brings 100,000? No way. You forgot late charges. Which brings it up to 1 million space bucks. An arbitrary escalation of things. Oh, man.
Shoot, 900,000 space bucks in late charges.
Yeah, it sounds about
like
right.
Blockbuster Video.
It's come on.
Like, does anybody ever notice how the inside of Pizza's mouth, like the lower jaw, just looks so weird?
It looks like he's got like a giant giant tongue or something. No.
Well, it looks like
a tongue behind there.
It's like a goatee chin, but like there's not enough face.
Oh, it's so nasty.
It is quite disturbing.
And then Vinny takes a chunk out of him at the end there. You're a delicious boss.
Yeah. But
and it's Dom DeLuise, and I think at one point he was in the costume.
Well, there's just human eyes behind it.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's Dom DeLuise. The voice is definitely Dom DeLuise, and he may have actually been in there, because I remember hearing a story once that like they were going to do like additional scenes, or you know they're doing more shots, and he's like, I'm not going back in that costume. So I don't know if there's ever like a break where you can't see him anymore, and they just do the voice. But there was a point where he said, "To hell with this! I'm not going back in that costume."
That's when they said, "Okay, Pizza the Hut." That's where they came up with the genius of him eating himself to death in the car. It's like, all right, we got to write him off somehow.
Then we fast forward to Vespa making her getaway with the bun hairdo earphones.
Yep, classic
quick
gag.
Little gag there. And then we get a shot, an establishing shot of Spaceball City. And now, in the aftermath of the prequels, I find that looks like Gunga City.
Yeah, a little.
A little bit. All like the little bubble structures.
Yeah. And then without the water, could have inspired it a little, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. And then one of the, like, almost like a dad joke type thing. Perry Air.
After he lies to the reporter.
Dude, just Mel Brooks' acting in that. It's so good.
Oh, his overreacting throughout the movie is superb.
He just like hangs up.
I love Mel
Brooks.
Hangs
up on the guy. Shithead. And just like, cracks her open. Oh, it's so good, man. Like, that's one of my favorite gifs or gifs, whatever. It's so called for sometimes.
The next is possibly It's one of my seven big jokes of Spaceballs. It might be my favorite gag in the whole movie. The whole beaming him down, snotty part.
Okay, there's so much to talk about here. First of all,
we got to unpack this scene.
They put that stupid hat on Snotty to make him look Scottish, but they couldn't pick a guy who could do a Scottish accent. It's like the thinnest Scottish accent I've ever heard in my life.
It's the worst. They should have got Mike Myers for this.
He
could have added to Mike Myers' repertoire of unending Scottish characters.
Exactly. Orange head. Definitely. Look at the size of that melon. It looks like an orange on a toothpick.
It's a virtual planetoid.
Heat pants. No.
Oh, God. So good.
Two movies
for the price of one here, guys.
Does it bug you guys when you watch that scene? It's always bugged me that his hands aren't on backwards.
Yeah, you got to look past that one. That would have been that's pretty tough to do.
Well, he could have even just turned his arms around, like,
yeah, no,
like to fake it. You know what I mean? Like, he could have just turned his elbows around. Anyway,
so they try the beaming technology, and of course, it's a pretty perilous thing. When you look at the Star Trek version of this, it's dematerializing somebody and then reassembling the molecules, including your brain.
So you're basically
that's perilous, man.
You're dead for a matter of time, anyhow.
Yeah, like every time you beam out and beam back in, it's like a new copy of yourself.
Exactly. The old you is forever weird, gone. Man. Yeah, it's existential shit.
That is really weird stuff. But anyway, so President Scroob gets rematerialized and his head's on backwards. But it's so bad because you could tell he's just wearing his suit.
He put his clothes on backwards and stuffed his ass with like a couple of t-shirts or something.
Why didn't someone tell me my ass was so big?
But his hands are... anyway,
you're getting
that's a great gag.
It's snotty, too, which is just so bad.
Beam me up, Snotty.
It deserves some kind of mention.
The best part is they beam him back to his room, to President Scroob's chamber.
Yeah.
Should we try it again, sir? No more beaming. This time I'm going to walk. And you think he's going to walk across the ship? It's the next room.
So good.
Lock one, lock two, lock Lorn.
It's, God almighty, that joke, that is one of the best things I've
it's
ever
one of
seen.
The best jokes in the whole movie. It's on my list as well, obviously.
Like, the next goddamn room and they're fucking around with this thing.
It took them 5 minutes to beam back and forth.
Oh, God.
Snotty beamed me twice last night. It was magnificent, or whatever she says.
She's super hot.
She is, eh? I was going to say that, like, but usually Kyle calls me out on that, but damn. Something about the...
What was her name?
80s lady.
Zircon?
80s lady.
Wasn't it like Commander Zircon, the character's name?
Wow, that's impressive. I didn't know she had a name.
I'm Marlene. Hello, Marlene. I'm Charlene.
Hey, but you shouldn't get the second one wrong. She just told you what the first one's name is, you dummy.
You just said it yourself. Like, he just doesn't really care.
So we're in the midst here of, for me, what might be like the best 5 minutes of the movie. Where they're chasing down Princess Vespa.
Careful, you idiot! I said across her nose, not up it!
Sorry, sir. I'm doing my best.
Who made that man a gunner?
I did, sir. He's my cousin.
Who is he?
He's an asshole, sir.
I know that. What's his name?
That is his name, sir. Asshole. Major asshole.
And his cousin?
He's an asshole, too, sir. Gunner's mate, first class, Philip Asshole.
How many assholes we got on this ship, anyhow?
Yo!
I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes.
Yo!
The whole crew.
And that's another quintessential joke. Assholes. Yeah, that's it. I knew it. I'm surrounded by assholes. That's a great joke. Worth all the setup, for sure.
I don't know how we're going to work in all the sound effects for this show, because we're doing such a great job of impressioning these guys.
I'll just overlay it. Like, I'll cut us in and out of it.
Oh, that, but that's also a classic joke. Major asshole. That's perfect. The guy, they're all cross-eyed.
I actually like the little scene there right before that happens where Jones, the sound effects guy, is pretending like he's talking to the speaker, but the speaker's...
No, that scene's coming.
Oh, is it not? We're not there yet? Okay, good.
We're not quite there.
Dark Helmet gets so mad when when Jones still sounds all muffled, and yeah, even though he's not holding me, he takes it and rips it off and throws it.
I love that.
And then Jones talks normal after that. Honestly, that joke kills me.
It's so good. Dark Helmet has such a short fuse. It's unbelievable.
That's one of the best things about this movie is Rick Moranis' performance.
Oh, the best thing about this movie.
He's so good.
We'll get to that in the wrap-up, but yeah, I mean, he's the best part of this movie.
Oh, my God.
Do we need to bother with King Roland? Is he funny at all? The whole story about how he got the Mercedes?
Yeah, it's so good. It's a 2001 Mercedes.
Pretty funny, right?
Moonroof, leather interior. It's a good deal. I got it from my cousin.
I got it from my cousin, Prince Murray. Yeah.
He lives in the valley.
He gave me a great deal. It sounds almost like Trump-esque.
It totally does.
It's totally Drew-ish.
Careful.
That's at Chop Rules with a Z.
It's A. Yep. That's the whole point of this thing. They point it out in this film so often, you know, like.
Yeah, but I'm going to let them do it.
Yeah, but I'm just, you know, we're breaking down the film.
Yeah, dude, it is. And that's you set up for the next joke, right? Oh, great. A Drewish princess. Yeah. Funny. She doesn't look Drewish.
Yeah.
then we get to the bleeps, the sweeps, and the creeps,
yeah,
which I cannot and will not impersonate. But Michael Winslow, you might remember him from Police Academy. And if you haven't seen Police Academy, oh, God.
Yeah.
Treat yourself.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good one. Mahoney.
I don't know if it'd be good now. Oof, that's one I should watch again because I did love it back in the day.
There was five or six of them, right? Like, they're not all hits, but the first couple are spectacular.
What was his name in that? We had his toy.
Jones.
It was Jones, you're right.
Jamming
the radar, sir.
That's like
it appears to be.
Mel Brooks corny joke.
That's just awesome.
Only
raspberry.
There's only one man who would dare give me the raspberry.
Yeah.
Raspberry.
No, stop. Stop.
So good.
The zoom in. Is that where the camera zooms in so hard it hits him?
Yeah, that happens soon after that. The end of that scene. After he checks the radar and everything. Yeah, yeah. Bonk right in the head.
Yeah, then it's first off that he's like, prepare the secret hyperjets. Then they come out, he's like, prepare to attack. And then Lone Star takes off. He's like, where did they go? What's happening?
Where'd they go?
He's like, it looks like they had hyperactive jets, sir. He's like, what do we got? A Cuisinart?
What do we got on this thing? A Cuisinart? So good.
He's like, yeah, no, that's amazing.
Yeah, then right away, this is one of the best scenes in the movie.
No, we skipped over a good one. When they haul in her ship with the tractor beam, and then Dark Helmet's trashing talk to her, like, without opening the door. He opens it, looks inside.
He's like,
opens his mask. She's not in there.
I love when he opens up his mask because he's so much less intimidating with it up.
Well, that's
his glasses on. He's got glasses on under there.
He loses his temper. He opens his mask, which ruins the illusion of the mask. Oh man.
Yes.
And something else we learned in this movie, that there's no vacuum in space.
No, yeah. Barf just climbs down that ladder. He's like, come on.
I was hoping you guys would loophole that and be like, no, it's because they were in the tractor beam or something. But I was like...
Yeah, that's us who loophole shit.
Yeah, no, it's amazing when they take off. When the Winnebago swoops in, saves Princess Vespa and takes off. Wait, what happened? Where are they? He's so goddamn whiny.
He's so completely lost.
Wait! What happened? Where are they?
I don't know, sir. They must have hyperjets on that thing.
And what do we got on this thing? A Cuisinart?
No, sir.
We'll find them. Catch them.
Yes, sir. Prepare ship for light speed.
No. Light speed is too slow.
Light speed too slow?
Yes. We're going to have to go right to... ludicrous speed.
No. Light speed's too slow. Light speed's too slow.
Yes. Light speed's too slow.
We need to go straight to ludicrous speed. And the whole ship.
Yeah. What's the matter, Colonel Sanders?
Funny.
Chicken? That's the best part.
Ultimate line. That might be the best one line in the movie.
Well, and it's also so like time appropriate. Like that's not funny now unless you've seen the movie.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And you got.
But that was KFC at the peak of its power.
And you got to take it in context too. Like right after you see Colonel Sanders, his voice like totally cracking. Prepare ship. Prepare ship.
Prepare ship. Prepare ship.
So good. And just that spiel.
There's shopping malls and circuses, zoos, and Spaceball 1.
Yeah, it's so good.
Now, give me that, you petty excuse for an officer. Now, hear this. I can't even do it.
Yeah, it's so good.
Sir, don't forget to buckle up. Ah, buckle this.
We've used that in our intro segment. My brains are going into my feet.
Yeah, that was the intro for the first Sith Disturbers.
Yeah.
And I've recycled it a couple times since.
I think you're right.
It's so good. This that.
And they overshoot Lone Star through hyperspace.
Yeah, they've gone plaid. That as a kid was so good. It almost looks like the projection where they're in the Winnebago. It's just like someone put like a plaid curtain and just shone a light on it.
It's what it looks like. It's exactly what it looks like.
We can't stop. We've got to slow down first.
Bullshit!
Bullshit! Just stop this thing! I order you! Stop!
Your imitation of Sanders was great. We can't stop. We have to slow down first.
He's so good in that movie.
I love that. That bullshit makes me want to crap my pants.
Oh, man, so good.
And then, of course, they slam on the brakes.
Yeah, Rick Moranis.
Dark Helmet goes crashing into the control panel, and then he channels Lewis Tully.
Exactly.
Right?
I was just gonna say that. Yeah. He's so Lewis Tully for that scene. Yeah, yeah, you stole my little asterisk here. I wrote down.
Smoke if you got him.
How you doing?
We're stopped. Oh, good.
Why don't we take a 5-minute break?
And that, you know what? That visual of him flying across headfirst into the and crashing there is they milk that twice when they go to Spaceballs the movie, which we'll come up to in a minute. But it's just terrific, that gag.
Oh, that's one of my favorite parts.
It's too
good. Oh yeah, that's my highlight too. That's one of my 6 favorites, Corey. That's on my list.
An underrated joke, now that we're on the desert planet, Diogurt's planet, but I'm not sure what it's called. Is there a name to it?
Probably, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what the planet's name is.
It's Tatooine. Anyway, they're...
I doubt it.
Yeah. Sorry, it's Jakku.
And the whole tension between Lone Star and Princess Vespa as they lug her all of her belongings across the desert. And he takes this ginormous hairdryer, throws it on the ground, and she gets all indignant.
Yeah, the hairdryer says
you
hot air on it.
Pick that up. You pick that up. You pick that up. Like, he's such a shit disturber.
It's so good.
Yeah, but she's such a princess.
Exactly.
Oh, she's such a princess.
Dude, come on.
Well, like, throughout the whole time we're just getting to know Vespa, everything is, I am a royal princess, and you will refer to me as such. And like, she's so hoity-toity.
Your royal highness's matching luggage, sir.
Yeah. She's not being used to put in her place, and she likes that when someone finally does, right?
Yeah, she doesn't really push back that much, that hard.
That's that Tommy Bombadil 1.
What? It's true. I'm just breaking down the movie, man.
I gotcha.
And then we get to the, I think, what's probably the most clever gag, which is using Spaceballs the movie to figure out where they are.
Oh, that is
a breakthrough in home video technology.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
When's this? This is now.
What the hell am I looking at? When does this happen in the movie?
Now. You're looking at now, sir. Everything that happens now is happening now.
What happened to then?
We passed then.
When?
Just now. We're at now, now.
Go back to then.
When?
Now.
Now?
Now.
I can't.
Why?
We missed it.
When?
Just now.
When will then be now?
Soon.
One of the best parts is that when it's going forward and he's just like, Rick Moranis is looking at it and kind of like his nose is wrinkled and he's seeing how stupid he looks. He's like, no, 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 no. Go past this. In fact, never play it again.
So no, past this part, you're already so upset.
When will then be now?
Soon. They're looking at the camera and at their monitor like back. It's great. It's a great gag.
Oh, it was just so clever. You could not do that gag ever again in any movie and get away with it.
Nope.
That's, again, breaking the fourth wall.
And I think the whole Wizard of Oz gag was pretty genius.
It was great. Yeah.
And then when you finally meet him, it's like, it's so perfect. It's like, just plain yogurt. It's the first time I ever looked at it from that, like, looking at it from plain yogurt, you know, like, probably, like, I don't know, just all the other times, just like, yeah, he's just yogurt.
Really? That's the first time that you got the plain yogurt gag? That's awesome.
One of the things about yogurt in that costume, or Mel Brooks in that costume, is that he had a severe allergic reaction to the makeup. And he had to do like days. He had to go days between getting into those costumes because it was brutal on him.
Why don't you just, at that point, change it? Do something.
Like, I guess the selection of gold makeup in the 80s was maybe a bit limited.
But anyway, then it leads into explaining a bit about the Schwartz, and then what do you got coming right after? Come on,
go with merchandising.
That's so good. Like, they're just down. He's like, well, what do you do down there? He's like, merchandising. It's just so good. And that again relates back to the beginning where Lucas said, okay, just don't make toys. But yeah, he's got, you know, Spaceballs the lunchbox. Spaceballs,
the breakfast cereal, the flamethrower,
the coloring book,
popular with the kids.
Okay, now this is something.
Did you take a close look at the
coloring book? Yeah, that was my thing that I wanted to tell you guys. It's Optimus Prime on the cover. It's the first time I ever noticed it. The coloring book, it's clearly Optimus Prime with the word Spaceballs on top.
Yep.
You didn't notice that, James? Yep. Have you ever seen that?
Nope.
I noticed it for the first time tonight.
I didn't notice that until today.
Me too. I had to like rewind it. I'm like, you got to be kidding me. So funny.
Yeah, the merchandising bit was pretty damn good. And that yogurt plush doll, I would give so much to have that.
Seriously, eh?
May the Schwartz be with you. Adorable.
He's so good, Mel Brooks.
Now we can do Comb the Desert. This is an all-timer. I have flagged this one as one of my top seven as well.
Yeah, me too. And how can you not? You got the first guys and then the second guys and then the guys with the afro pick. We ain't found shit.
We ain't found shit.
Again, is that another kind of joke that just wouldn't fly today, I guess, right?
No, I don't know. I think that joke would be okay.
I'd hope so because, god damn, it's funny.
But it's also so pathetic.
Yeah, it really is. It's a bad... Like, that's the whole best part about this movie, is that some of the jokes are almost so bad that you're like, yes!
Well, no, it's the Spaceballs, as a group, are so pathetic. They're so stupid. Like, it would take them centuries to comb that desert with those brushes. No, you idiot. He said to comb the desert, so we're combing it.
The literal stuff too, those jokes in the movie, like I did a play once when I was in grade 2 and it was all like those sort of like puns and double entendres and stuff, like where we assaulted each other and like we sprinkled salt on each other in the play, like, and ever since I was a kid and was in that play, I love that style of humor. And so yeah, Comb the Desert and
wordplay,
anything else that's wordplay like that just killed me, slays me, and it's still funny to me.
And then, oh, man, like the hits keep on coming. We cut to Dark Helmet playing with his dolls.
Yeah, I was gonna say that too. I don't. You want to mention?
Again, Rick Moranis makes this scene.
It's so good.
Oh, your helmet is so big.
I just love the way he does Lone Star. I'm here to save my girlfriend. It's so good.
What are you doing to my friend?
Yeah,
the same thing I'm going to do to you, big boy.
It's so good. That part. I'm just so strangely attracted to you. He's like, yes, most Jewish princesses are attracted to money and power, and I have both.
Like that, I don't know if that gag flies today.
Yeah, true. But it's no, it's gotta fly. I don't care, man. It's not too much for.
Well, of course you don't care. You're not the one getting crushed as a gender.
Yeah, but it's not even about that. It's not like I even believe like that they're, you know, like it's just.
Careful and moving on.
I don't care.
And edit. And James, this is got it. This is classic. The combination on the luggage,
or even before that though. So we gotta go with the toys too. Come on, Colonel Sanders just barges into the room. He's like, sweeps up his toys in that dramatic fashion. He's like, knock before you
knock
come
on
in.
My door. Knock next time. He's
like, Thor, I didn't see you playing with your doll, sir.
Again.
Yeah.
Good, he says. Good. So combination on the luggage. So I'm replacing a teacher recently, I'll say in the last couple of years. And when you have a replacement contract, like you operate basically as them while they're away. So you like to do grades and stuff, you log into the computer with their username and password. So I'm doing the grades at the end of the year, 1 year. And I call the like administrator to say like, I need this person's password so I can enter their grades. And sure enough, password was
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the stupidest combination I ever heard in my life. That's the kind of thing an idiot would have on his luggage.
It works, sir. We have the combination.
Great. Now we can take every last breath of fresh air from planet Druidia. What's the combination?
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yes.
That's amazing. I've got the same combination on my luggage.
5 and 6.
5 and 6.
Because hers was 5. Well, hers was 6 letters long, but I couldn't believe it.
Oh, man. That part is so good. That whole scene is actually good. With Dr. Schlotkins.
Yeah, we gotta touch back a bit on like how he fools the princess and gets her back. Like, when he pretends to be King Roland.
King Roland? I hate that gag. I find that. I love it.
I
don't laugh at that at all. I never did.
Would I lie? And then he gets his, fooled you. It's so good.
I never laughed at that, ever.
Really, yeah, I love the fooled you part.
Nah, just never did anything for me. I don't know why.
Yeah, I'm in between. It was okay. I like that voice. He uses that same voice when he fools Lone Star later. And I can't believe you fell for that man. We'll get to it, but...
And by this point, the heroes have landed in Spaceball City and they're attempting to rescue the princess.
Or as you pointed out, Kyle, Gungan City.
Yeah. And there's a couple guards that they beat up and steal the uniforms from, just like Han and Luke in A New Hope. But then they find those two guards later on in their skivvies.
Hey, those are the guys that stole our uniforms.
Beat the shit out of us. And kicked our asses.
Too.
And it's funny because, like, Barf's a big dude, right? Like, John Candy was big. So, like, the guards were really, like, the perfect two guards to run into, right? One tall, skinny guy and one pretty big dude.
Yeah.
Of course. How convenient. But how often do you see a guy, like, who's supposed to be the part of the villain, like, the villain group? Yeah, beat the shit out of us, too. He's completely emasculated. And yet they're still on patrol in their skivvies. Did you guys notice the Wilhelm scream?
Always.
That was a good little Easter egg.
It's when they killed the cameraman, right?
No, that was in the duel.
Hmm. Oh, yeah, when they dragged him in the trailer?
The stunt doubles.
In the Winnebago?
Yeah. Well, I mean after where they're in the hallway shooting out with the space balls. And then Barf pulls those pipes off the wall. And somehow each space ball manages to shoot in the pipe and have it redirect back at them.
Yeah. I think they might use it again, too, when they're dueling. When Dark Helmet and Lone Star are dueling and they accidentally, like, slay into the crew. And Lone Star's like, he did it. I think there might be a Wilhelm scream there, too.
That's so good. That's another time. That's again, they break the fourth wall again there.
So capturing the stunt doubles.
Yeah, that's great.
That's breaking the fourth wall too. It's
underrated part of the movie. Like the Spaceballs captain in this scene is amazing.
What a pity. Yeah. That's the best.
But it's his reaction. Turn around, please.
You idiots!
But he sells the scene.
He does. He makes it.
Oh, he might be my favorite guy in the whole movie.
So, Princess, you thought you could outwit the imperious force of...
You idiots!
Well, one of the things in this movie that they're so aware of, like even the Spaceballs in the movie, like not only are they aware of the fourth wall, like they're completely aware that they're making a movie. And so the next scene has Resident Evil running footsteps.
Hail, Sloop!
Ship is too big. If I walk, the movie will be over.
Sir.
Yes. Oh! Never have that damn thing down in front of me. How do I know you're not making faces at me under that thing?
This is my favorite joke in the whole movie.
It's so good.
I circled it.
Well, then take it away. It's all yours.
He says, you hear like fast steps or even like running steps. And then he walks in. He's like, ship's too big. If I walk, the movie's over. As he enters the bridge. It's terrific. It's because like you say, it encapsulates perfectly the humor idea that every character is aware that they're making a movie while they make the movie.
But yet earlier in the movie, they did the whole beaming thing. So he's willing to beam from room to room, but not across the ship.
Well, not anymore. They put his head on backwards. Come on. Ship's too big. If I walk, the movie's over. I love that line. It's my favorite line in the movie right now.
Everything starts going to hell. Is this the point where we're at? No, we're not at the duel yet, are we?
Yeah, I would say it's coming up. They have to turn into the big... Yeah.
There's do something. Do something. Do something. None of the higher-ups want to do anything. Then a bunch of Vulcan neck pinches.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah.
Stupid. Nah. You got it's like all this. Wrong.
The shave. It's right down. It's down lower where the shoulder meets the neck. Like this? Yeah.
The shaving cream in the mouth, too.
So good. But I like how he's like, nah, 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 stupid, he says.
Oh, God. And then, of course, the classic play as Lone Star and Dark Helmet meet. There's one thing you should know about us. I am your father's, brother's, cousin's, nephew's former roommate.
What does that make us?
What does that make us?
Absolutely nothing.
Which is what you will be.
Then the whole Schwartz thing. I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
They get them twisted. Yeah,
again.
This is where, like, when I'm first watching this as, like, a 9-year-old, that, like, I get the joke.
Yeah.
But do my parents know that I get the joke, and are they about to turn the movie off? I guess at this point they're going to let anything fly.
Of course, even I got it at that age. It's like...
And they break the fourth wall. They kill a boom operator. He did it!
Yeah, that's great.
One of my favorite lines in the movie... Evil will always triumph because good is dumb.
Yeah.
That's after he takes his ring. Put her there.
Yeah, that's one of the best scenes. So good.
Yeah, stealing the knife.
Idiot! I can't believe you fell for that man. Here, let me give it back to you. Oh, you fell for that one too!
The oldest trick in the book, man.
What's with you, man?
So good.
And then, again, here's a gag that shows how dated this movie is. As Lone Star is sort of avoiding Dark Helmet's laser blasts. Very impressive. Too bad this isn't the wide world of sports.
Yeah.
When did that go off the air? Like 20 years ago or more?
Probably, yeah.
Like that went off the air when they stopped airing bowling. And then, of course, the mirror. Dark Helmet gets a shot in his pills. And he sets off the self-destruct button, which is just so stupidly located right in the open for anybody to press it.
Yeah, even the deal or no deal button was better protected than that thing.
The abandoned ship and chaos ensues for the next little while.
Yeah, are we totally skipping out on Megaman going from suck to blow? Or Megamaid, sorry?
Yeah, I think we did.
That was a good one. That's a joke that you don't get as a kid. You're just like, heh heh, Mega Maid went from suck to blow. But then as an adult, you're like, yeah, damn. Damn, Mel.
Yeah, damn. That is a big maid.
Then, of course, a swipe at all presidents ever. I don't know what to do. I can't make decisions. I'm a president.
Yeah, pretty fitting 30 years later.
I would think so. Well, you know what? Not to go too deep down that rabbit hole, but I think the guy now isn't afraid to make decisions, just the totally incorrect ones.
Yeah, he should be more afraid to make decisions.
Like, he thinks he knows exactly what to do. And then probably my favorite part of the movie is where they're all searching frantically for the the cancellation, but the self-destruct cancellation button.
No, it's when they all, yeah. It's true, like, the scramble is definitely the best part, especially the way it's choreographed.
This is, like, very staged comedy where they all slide down a separate staircase and, like, collide as they reach the bottom. And they open that little compartment.
Where is it? It's gotta be here! Out of order! Fuck! Even in the future, nothing works!
I like that fuck, the way he drops that fuck is perfect. Fuck!
It's perfect. It's the best fuck in movie history.
It is. It's good.
I really would like to know how many takes that took.
It could only take one. There's nothing like a good fuck.
Okay.
It's true, though. Honestly, like, in a movie, like, I miss Rick Moranis, man.
Jango Fett disagrees, but, you know.
It's perfect for the character, though. That's the thing, you know, Rick Moranis, he's such a, like, I don't know, his character, he's so small and, like, gentle and whatever, and then to see him, like, it's such a different role than other roles that he's done, like Louis Tully or, I can't remember his name from
Seymour.
Yeah, Seymour. The Little Shop.
The dad from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah, that came after there, but.
Bob McKenzie.
Yeah, yeah. All this stuff on SCTV.
Yeah, no, he'd never done anything like Dark Helmet. So Mega Maid Spaceball 1 is destroyed, and we cut to a scene at the diner. Classic scene at the diner.
You know what's funny about that scene at the diner? Well, a lot is, but the Hello My Baby, Hello My Darling, like Top Hat Kane dance song, I felt like that was like, I felt like I got that and my parents didn't because I watched Looney Tunes.
Yeah. Like that registered to me right away.
Yeah, that really hit with me. Like I was like, I get this. This is like, I know what they're making fun of.
Yeah, but the Looney Tunes have been around since the 40s, no?
Yeah, fair enough. I didn't, but at the time I didn't really realize that my dad had grown up with
What about Aliens?
Particular scene, you know? Well, Aliens, I got the Looney Tunes reference more than I got the Aliens reference. I knew what movie they were hitting, but I hadn't seen that movie when I saw Spaceballs for the first time.
Yeah, it went right over my head. I hadn't seen Alien. I'm not even sure if I knew about it then, and I definitely didn't. I had no clue that it was the same actor. No clue that it was John Hurt in both Alien and Spaceballs.
I love John Hurt.
Even though he said, like, oh no, not again.
Yeah, it's so good.
It didn't register at all that it was the same guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Check, please. And they get the hell out of that diner. And we get a kind of a tiny lull in the funny stuff until the Planet of the Apes spoof.
Which is Michael York.
Well, the happy ending, yeah. Too, with, you know, finally Lone Star opens his cookie and finds out he's a prince. I'm a prince!
Liquid Schwartz.
Yeah, that's gold.
And they just happened to have an emergency gas tank in the glove box.
Yeah, they didn't want to send barf outside into non-vacuum space again.
Exactly, right? Like, what's the big deal? Michael York. Dear me, what are those things coming out of her nose? Space balls!
Oh, fuck, there goes the planet.
Oh, man, and then we have the wedding at the end, and holy fuck, is Lone Star Space Tuck ridiculous or what?
So good.
I don't remember it being so crazy out there. Like, it looks like something from a 1983 Whitesnake video.
It's outrageous.
Mixed with the Three Amigos.
It's
outlandish.
It's crazy.
Yeah, amazing.
And that's the end of the movie. And man, oh man, there's some gut-busting laughs in there.
Yeah, I laughed out loud several times on my viewing this evening.
And again, I'm curious to see, like, I'd like to get opinion on this in the sense that, you know, Commonwealth-wise, some of the younger viewers, what's going on? Like, do they like Spaceballs? Because I heard recently, like, people that I deal with or partake in conversations with on Twitter every now and again. Like, a couple months back, there was something along the lines of spoofs and Star Wars, and then I was like, Spaceballs, come on, like, Spaceballs, and they're like, yeah, no. And granted,
well, they're wrong. We've been down this. We talked about this. Those people are wrong, Corey.
I get it, but they're also years younger than us. You know, like, just might not hit the same kind of chords. You know, I think as kids, you're able to really accept that some of the jokes in this movie a lot more easily. And it,
well, part of it is, I mean, it ties into the larger issue of comedians now who used to tour like college campuses as like their lifeblood. They can't do it anymore because their jokes, they get run off campus by college kids who are offended by everything.
Snowflakes. We call them snowflakes.
Yeah, I'm starting to see it more and more these days, especially in the regards to the recent events with the Han Solo film. But, yeah, I'm kind of getting fed up with people fucking just loving to complain just to complain.
Chop rules with a Z.
I didn't say what they're complaining about, but.
Yeah, well, no, I'm on the same page, Corey.
So, before we close up, I mean, obviously we all love this movie. It holds a very, very near and special place in our hearts. But was there, I mean, I think we probably consider ourselves very, very well steeped in this movie, but was there anything that you missed now that we're a lot older and probably haven't watched this in a long time? Any jokes that you missed as kids?
Just the chapter 11 thing. Chapter 11 that I caught tonight. Like, I missed that reference.
The Valium thing, though, is a little older. I think there's another one we talked about as well.
Well, I think we'd all missed the Optimus Prime.
Definitely missed that.
I don't know if that
yep.
was so much as a joke or more a budget constraint.
Easter egg, budget constraint.
I don't think it was an Easter egg. Like, back in that year, I don't think they were too much thinking about.
Well, that was 87. That was the end of Transformers. But when they were making that, when they were making Spaceballs, Transformers were as popular as anything.
I'm just saying, I don't think Easter eggs were a thing until the advent of the internet, really, you know, kind of. Like, it, to that degree, I think it was just that the cover of that coloring book had kind of pertained, you know, it looked busy and it looked like there was a robot kind of there or something, you know?
I mean, I think they could have, if they wanted to, they could have found something more space, outer space looking and generic. Instead, they had big red Optimus Prime right on the front cover.
No. Nothing like that is done by accident. Someone was a fan and they were like, I'm putting Optimus Prime in the movie. Like, it's not more complicated.
To be honest,
none of that's an accident.
I see being more Mel Brooks being like, just buy a goddamn coloring book.
Who knows?
Maybe.
Yeah. I missed Colonel Sanders ducking out of the way when the camera is zooming in on Dark Helmet.
When it hits him?
Yeah. I've always missed Sanders, like, looking at the camera and then ducking out of the way.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's terrific.
It's amazing. I missed that Lone Star. He's from somewhere in the Ford Galaxy.
Oh, yes.
You need, right. I caught that a while ago. That's surprising to me.
Yeah, I heard it again tonight, but it wasn't new, but I laughed when I heard it.
President Scroob, when he's in bed with Marlene and Charlene?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
The book is upside down, but it's a book about him. You see Mel Brooks on the cover.
What does it say? Make the galaxy great
again? The letters.
I wish it did.
Wouldn't that be prophetic?
Yes.
But no, it's almost like an autobiography about President Scroob, which he's holding upside down.
No, I didn't catch that.
And then I got to poking around a little bit, just like, you know, what I like to do is seeing all the obscure cast members. Tress MacNeille and Phil Hartman from The Simpsons voiced some of the dinks, which is crazy. Like, do you really need them to do the dinks? Couldn't you get anybody to do the dinks? Rob Paulsen, who is a very, very famous voice actor in comics, I mean, in animation, he's currently the voice of Donatello in Ninja Turtles. He's the guy that says, he's the spaceball that says, "Not a thing, sir," when they're combing the desert.
Really?
Yeah. And lastly, the plastic surgeon.
He did look familiar. The nurse. Yet.
Well, you don't see his face. He's got the visor down, but it's the voice. Like, if I backed it up to that scene and listened again, it's Donatello. It's unmistakable.
Really, eh? Well, you see his face at one point. The surgeon for her nose you're talking about, right?
Well, no. So the spaceball combing the desert, Rob Paulsen, you don't see his face, but you hear the voice. Now, the plastic surgeon's nurse, Gretchen, I think is her name, that is Sue Ellen Mischke from Seinfeld.
Really?
Sue Ellen Mischke?
Yeah, it's George's fiance, no?
No, that's...
No.
I think...
That's...
The heir to the O. Henry candy bar fortune.
Oh, yeah.
The one that...
Yeah.
She's walking around town with her shirt open and her bra out. And Kramer... Is it Kramer that drives off the road and slams into a pole?
Yeah.
Sues her and then reneges so that he can just get free candy bars? Yeah, so there you go. There's some little Obscura from Spaceballs. Favorite characters? I mean, is it unanimous or what?
I don't know if I could pick one favorite character. I mean, if I had to, it would be Dark Helmet. But they've all got their moments.
Like it's Dark Helmet hands down.
Yeah, hands down.
Yeah.
Rick Moranis runs away with this movie.
President Scroob's pretty great, and Barf too. True. I don't know. They've all got their moments, but yes.
Mel Brooks, definitely. It's
Rick
his
Moranis
movie.
Is definitely a stealer.
Mel Brooks does both.
I don't know if this is by design or you know, if it's just a byproduct of the type of movie and humor it was doing, but I didn't find the heroes all that funny. Like, I don't find Lone Star funny at all.
No,
but he's sort of the straight guy.
But he does try to nail some humor. Like, he does try to throw out some jokes, and like there's mannerisms that he has that they all miss for me.
Yeah, he's not, Lone Star's not particularly funny.
No,
I
100%
agree
with you. He's not the comedic relief in this film.
Joan Rivers didn't make me laugh all that much, except for the time she called him sex fiend.
Yeah. Virgin alarm. Virgin alarm.
Yeah. And she's like, "That's enough of you, sex fiend."
Yeah. And her name's Dot Matrix.
Well, yeah, it's like an old 80s computer reference that no longer applies.
Yeah.
Yes, I mean, this is definitely Rick Moranis' movie.
And Mel Brooks, like you said.
And a bit of... And Mel Brooks, too. Colonel Sanders is underrated, I think. And John Candy gets, I guess, a good piece of the pie, too.
I'm a Mog.
I'm my own best friend.
So how long do you think it'll be before you watch this movie again? Because, you know, I went through the movie, and I'm like, you know, I'm glad I watched this, but it's not something I think I could watch, you know, every couple months. Like, I think it's going to go away again for a while.
A couple years.
Yeah, it'll
be
years.
You know what it should be, Kyle? When your little man turns 5, which means your little girl's going to be about, what, 8?
Yeah.
That'd be a good age, because they'll be well versed in Star Wars lore.
I'm not putting this movie in front of them at 5 and 8. I don't care how old I was. I'm not sticking this in front of them.
Well, I definitely know that I want to watch it with my kid at one point, while he's young too. Probably, like, you know, like you said, if 9, 10, maybe
double digits minimum. Minimum double digits.
Yeah, there's some good adult humor in there.
Yeah, no, there'll be plenty of time to corrupt the kids. I don't need to rush that process.
So maybe wait till then. Can you do it for 5 years? Put it in the vault?
Probably. All right. Do we have any final thoughts before we wrap up?
I think we hit all of mine. Not how stupid.
It's kind
of
like
if you think of it again, like we've said it over and over again tonight, like can't say that these days, can't say this these days. So it is in a way like gone the way of the dodo. It's a thing of the past. Movies somewhat of this nature. I'm still really, 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 really hoping they're going to do a part two. They talked about it even within this movie that they would hit up doing a part two. But really genius, you know, again, kind of low-hanging fruit in the sense that it's taking advantage of a franchise that did so well, but they did such a good job with it for the amount of money they had. The story that Mel had written.
Well, he was doing a talk recently, and they are in talks. Mel Brooks is talking with MGM. Like, MGM is super interested in getting this a second Spaceballs off the ground because of the resurgence in Star Wars. So they're talking. Doesn't mean it's going to happen, but they are talking. Mel Brooks said this. So.
And they're already doing that, but they're already doing another Star Wars spoof now with the guys who are doing Scary Movie style stuff, no?
Yeah, who cares? Who cares?
Yeah.
Spaceballs are coming. Well, either Spaceballs will embarrass itself or it will blow them away. We'll see how timeless Mel Brooks can really be and how his humor can evolve with the times.
I have faith in him. I think he's still probably going to be funny.
Like the corny stuff will still go. It's the edgy stuff, the racial stuff, the gender-based stuff.
There's still an edge. He just has to walk a new edge.
Yeah, he's gotta find that edge, and hopefully he's got some clever writers with him that will help him get it off the ground. I'd love to see a second Spaceballs.
If he's smart, he won't tell Disney. Damn it, he won't tell Lucasfilm or anybody else. But he'll hire Seth MacFarlane to help him write it.
Oh, like a script doctor type thing?
And be able to keep the merchandising rights.
Because he's more into... Because Seth's definitely still in touch with, you know, where the edge is.
Like, I wondered if Kevin Smith could also help with that.
For sure he could. Absolutely he could. That'd be a great name to attach to it. Not that I think, you know, Mel Brooks is out of touch, but he's, you know, he is 90.
Yeah, oh, he's absolutely up there. He's definitely up there, and he could probably use some help, if I'm being frank.
No, you be Kyle.
Okay. Anyway, guys, good job. High fives all around this edition of Sith Disturbers. I had a blast watching this movie, and I had a blast. I've never really gone through the movie like this, beat for beat, with anybody to this extent. So.
And I'm curious.
This was fun.
I'm curious to see again what... Any feedback, you know, age-wise, especially ads, kind of looking in your direction, brother. Hopefully you were able to watch the movie if you were able to make time. And, you know, be honest with us, bro. We could take it. You know, if you liked it, you didn't like it, if age did play a factor, like, I'm really curious to hear what you feel about it or what...
Corey says stuff like that, but he doesn't mean it. He really means is, please tell me you like it, because it will crush my inner soul if you don't like the things that
yeah,
I
well,
like.
I was trying to find a tweet today. I was trying to find a GIF today, actually, when Ad said that he'd never seen it, where I was looking for... I was typing in the words something like, I thought I knew you, stuff like that. But there was nothing really... You know, it wasn't gold enough to post.
I gotcha.
All right, everybody, that'll do it for this edition of Sith Disturbers, the Sith Disturbers Spaceballs 30th Anniversary Edition. God, that's a mouthful. Hope you enjoyed it. Send us your feedback. Let us know your favorite gags from the movie, if you've seen it, if you like the movie, if you hate the movie. We want to hear about that, too. Corey, where can they reach you and tell you these wonderful feedback comments?
Chop rules with a Z.
And James, where can you be found?
Tommy Bombadil 1 on the Twitter.
And of course, I'm at Tumbling Saber on Instagram, Facebook, and the Twitter. And again, don't forget to check out Dr. Annalise Ophelia. Did I say that right? Did I screw that up? Anyway, check out Looking for Leia on Kickstarter and see if you've got $5 in loose change kicking around and help push that movie to its goal. And stay tuned. In a couple days from now, we will have episode 81 of the Tumbling Saber podcast in your earballs, and I'm sure I try and figure out what we're going to talk about in that one. I'm not quite sure. But if you have any questions you want to send to us for the show, now is the time. So get on your keyboards and send us your questions, and we'll be happy to answer them. And until then, have a good weekend, guys, and thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to the Sith Disturbers Podcast, brought to you by the Warped Minds at the Tumbling Saber, proud member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Network. Visit StarWarsCommonwealth.com and take your first step into a larger world.
Hey, you guys know it took us as long to talk about the movie as it does to watch the movie?
What the hell are you doing? The Vulcan neck pinch? Oh, no, stupid. You got it much too high. It's down here where the shoulder meets the neck. Like this?
Yeah!